Share Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
So uninspired. Oh. And when I knew I had to face another day, oh. Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, my life was so unkind. You're the key to my peace of mind. Cause you
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Help me name
it. Now I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for. And if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. Cause you make me feel. You make me feel. You make me feel like a natural.
Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. We're talking with Dr. William Davis, Wheat Belly Total Health. It's the ultimate grain-free health and weight loss plan book. Good evening, Dr. Davis. How are you?
Good evening. I'm terrific. You?
Fantastic. It's been a long time since we've spoken, and can you share with us what has happened since it's been, how long ago was it that Wheat Belly came out?
That was 3 years ago. Well, you know, I think we've sparked a movement. You know, to be honest, I'm not that good-looking or interesting a guy. if it was just based on my personality and charisma, I don't believe we'd get very far. So
I think
the reason why this has sparked really a national or even an international movement that grows and grows is because I think it works. That is, people, particularly in this day and age of social media, tell each other, you know, I'll be darned. I've lost 43 pounds and 3 inches off my waist, and my rheumatoid arthritis is gone. My asthma is gone. I've gotten rid of the need for 3 inhalers. I'm no longer diabetic. My chronic skin rash has disappeared. My leg swelling is gone. And on and on and on. It's all these astounding stories that the great irony, of course, is this all develops after we get rid of the food that we were all told to eat more of. So that's why I believe this thing has become more of a movement than just a new diet or a new fad.
I'm wondering what the medical community, what has the medical community, and I'm just wondering about those people who are making recommendations as far as diet, any changes?
You know, I think we'll never, Kinshasa, we'll probably never hear the American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, USDA, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I don't believe we're ever going to hear these words. We made a mistake. We actually added or even caused the epidemic in the U.S. of diabetes, obesity, and autoimmune diseases, among other things. Because if they said anything like that, they would have all the trial attorneys on their backs within seconds. And so they're never going to say that. What I see happening, though, is a gradual, subtle ratcheting back of their original message. You know, the American Diabetes Association has been a champion of very high carbohydrate eating, which we all know causes diabetes. And they're now ratcheting back quietly. They don't even announce it. They just do it very quietly. I think that's what we're going to see. Thankfully, you know what? After the initial skepticism by my colleagues, that is physicians, I now hear from many, many, many of them who, having witnessed the astounding transformations of their patients, are learning from their patients. Now I have doctors coming to me and saying, you know what? I know it's against all the things we're told and all the things we were taught, but I'll be darned. This stuff works, and I did it myself, and I lost, you know, whatever, 43 pounds. I'm off three drugs, my blood pressure drugs, my cholesterol drugs, my antidepressant. So I'm seeing even the physicians now more and more embracing this message because it works.
The Wheat Belly Total Health, why did you write this book?
Well, you know, in those 3 years, we learned a ton of new lessons. You know, the first book I picked on this thing that enjoys the blessings of all official agencies, that is wheat. You know, when people say they eat grains or we're told to eat more healthy whole grains, they're not really referring, for the most part, to teff or millet. They're referring to wheat primarily, and that's what people did. They ate wheat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I picked on the thing that was enjoying the blessings of all official agencies and dominated the diets of most people. So I thought that was a big enough job to tackle for one book. But I've extended the conversation now based on all the lessons we've learned since then, some very, very important lessons, and the fact that, you know, people don't think of wheat this way, but it's actually a seed of a grass. And that is literally true. It is the seed of a grass. When you see a wheat plant, of course, whether it's a traditional wheat plant that's 4.5-5 feet tall, or the modern strains, which are 18 inches tall, the high-yield semi-dwarf creation of genetics research, that's what wheat is now, regardless of the source, we don't eat the roots, we don't eat the stalk, we don't eat the leaves, we can only try to eat the seed, and even then we have to remove the husk, we have to dry it, pulverize it down to a flour, and then reconstitute it with water and heat it. And we can turn that into a porridge or bread or whatever. But those are the manipulations necessary to consume the seed of grasses. Now, the problem is, well, first of all, why can't we consume grasses like the grass in our yards? Because they're indigestible. We cannot digest grasses. And the rye grass and Kentucky bluegrass in your backyard is a close relative of wheat as well as rye, barley, rice, corn. They're all grasses, and they're all grasses from the biological family, Poaceae. That's what the biologists call it. So for the same reasons you can't eat the grass in your backyard, you know, we don't cut our lawns, of course, and save the clippings for a salad, right? So for the same reasons, we cannot eat most of the components or digest most of the components of grains, that is, the seeds of grasses. So even if we eat the seeds of grasses, we still can't digest most of the components in there. And that's why most of the proteins in grains have such astoundingly adverse effects on humans who consume it. And that's why I extend this conversation now to include all seeds of grasses, wheat, rye, barley, corn, rice, oats, etc.
My question is especially about the rice piece. It seems that the majority of the world their primary diet is rice. And especially in Asian countries, rice is an important component of their diet. And so this conversation might be a bit perplexed to a lot of people.
Well, rice is almost a category of its own. It's among the more benign, not to say it's entirely harmless. It does have ill effect, but several issues with rice. If you're on a limited calorie diet, I don't mean like somebody trying to lose weight. I mean people in cultures where they barely have enough calories. Then the high starch content of rice, you can deal with it. In a society like the U.S., where we don't have calorie deprivation, starvation, or barely adequate calorie intake, where we have at least potential for calorie excess, then the 85% starch content, so rice is over 85% carbohydrate, has real problems. We've got to remember that most Americans start this process as diabetics or pre-diabetics, or at least have high blood sugars approaching pre-diabetic range. This is the truth, unfortunately, for the vast majority of the public, including kids. So if you eat foods on that background of high blood sugars that raise blood sugar even further, like rice, then you got problems. Mm. Another issue is a recently uncovered issue of arsenic content. Now, we can't blame agribusiness for this. This is a natural characteristic of the rice plant. It concentrates arsenic from the soil. And the FDA went berserk about a year ago when this report came out, and they studied 150 rice-based foods in the hopes of disproving it, and they actually confirmed it. What's not clear is whether you develop chronic toxicity from it. So their studies are ongoing now. You don't develop acute toxicity from the arsenic in rice, but nobody knows if you can develop chronic toxicity. But the experiences, by the way, in countries where they have a lot of rice, they have seen arsenic toxicity. So that's another issue with rice. There's another issue with rice, and that is the content of something called wheat germ agglutinin. It's called that even though it's in rice because the structure of that protein is identical in rice as it is in wheat. And this is a bowel toxin. It has direct bowel toxicity. You know, the Chinese and Asian cultures who eat rice, it's not as if they're spared from all health problems. So it's not as if rice is entirely benign. It's not entirely benign. It is more benign than wheat, but it's not entirely benign.
We're talking with Dr. William Davis about his newest book, Wheat Belly Total Health. Here in the Twin Cities, we have probably more co-ops in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area than probably any city, major metropolitan area. We have lots of Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and all of them have a lot of organic food, including organic grains. Are the organic grains, are they omitted from this conversation?
Well, we got to be careful in our logic. We don't want to regard something that's simply less bad as good. So if we take grains, let's say wheat or rice or corn, and we now raise it with organic methods, that is, no pesticides, no herbicides, and no genetic modification, does that mean it's now good? Well, the basic components of those grains remain. For instance, the gliadin protein of wheat, rye, and barley also. And the gliadin protein of wheat triggers autoimmune diseases. It's the first step in the diseases of autoimmunity, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes in children, etc., 200 other conditions. That gliadin protein, that just gliadin remains intact, by the way, because it's very difficult to digest for humans. It's a component of the seeds of grasses. But the gliadin protein can also be partially digested, not down to single amino acids like other proteins, but down to pieces or peptides. And the unique structures of these peptides that come from the gliadin protein of wheat act as opiates on the human brain, and they stimulate appetite. So those components remain even if you have an organic seed of a grass or grain. So less bad is not necessarily good.
What is the effect of grains on our guts, on our intestinal tract?
Oh, wonderful point. Because that I call that the first battleground between grains and the human body, because there are so many disruptive factors in grains on the human digestive tract. One of them is that gliadin protein. When it is broken down to small pieces, it's a very, very potent intestinal toxin. And this is not my speculation, by the way. There's good science behind this. There's another protein called wheat germagglutinin, wheat that I mentioned earlier. That's a very potent bowel toxin. If I administer a little bit, a milligram, to a laboratory rat, its intestinal tract is destroyed when administered in purified form. The average American gets 10 to 20 milligrams per day. These effects also change bowel flora, the microorganisms that live in the gastrointestinal tract. Now, you know, we used to dismiss bowel flora as this meaningless black box. People would get antibiotics that would wipe them out, and we thought nothing of it. Well, that's proven to be very, very untrue. The composition of bowel flora is critical for health. And one of the great disruptive factors of bowel flora are grains.
For February 2024, we will be observing the theme of Black, Our Story, Past, Present, Now.
KFAI's traditional 24-hour takeover, All Radio is Black Radio, will take place on February 3rd, beginning at midnight. There will be other opportunities to intersect and engage.
We are looking for a crew of Black culture creators, journalists, DJs, audio producers, media creators, storytellers, anyone working in mediums that you hear to join us in creating this year's observance and more.
If you'd like to be involved, your cherished and valued participation is welcome.
Visit the Black Our Story page at kfai.org or call the main office at 612-887-4400 and a member of the Black Division community will get back to you.
We're talking with Dr. William Davis. His newest contribution, Wheat Belly Total Health. In this segment, Dr. Davis is talking about the effects of grains
of gluten in the body.
You know, that wheat germ of gluten also blocks your gallbladder and prevents bile from being expressed by your gallbladder. It also blocks the release of pancreatic enzymes, because wheat germ of gluten is a very potent blocker of a hormone called cholecystokinin. And that's the hormone responsible for gallbladder function and pancreatic enzyme release. Well, if you can't release those things, you get partial digestion of foods. And that's why I believe you told me earlier that you can actually see undigested remnants of a meal coming out in the stool when you consume grains. That's because there's something called wheat germ gluten that blocks digestion. And that's just a partial list. There's many other things in grains that disrupt bowel. That's why people get acid reflux and bowel urgency and irritable bowel syndrome and bloating and gas and diarrhea and ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. These are all diseases, largely diseases of grain consumption.
It's very interesting because most Americans believe that the only way that they can get fiber, and I know, gosh, it was probably right before I did the interview with you, there was a doctor who wrote a book on constipation, and the entire thing was based on consuming as much grains as you can so that you can create enough bulk in order to get things to come out. And so the issue that most folks would ask you, doctor, is if I'm not eating grains, how am I going to get my fiber?
Well, there's a lot of fictions out there. So one fiction is that humans need wood fiber. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about cellulose. So, Kinshasa, I don't believe there's any proof that humans have an intrinsic need for wood. But when you buy high-fiber cereals, that's essentially what you're getting. So humans cannot digest cellulose, wood fiber, and that's why it bulks up stool. And it partially overcomes, for some people, the constipating effect of grains. Now, I hate to admit it, but there is a good fiber in grains, and it's called arabinoxylin. So if you go grain-free, as we all do, you lose about 3 grams per day of this truly healthy fiber called arabinoxylin. This is a fiber called a resistant fiber, a resistant starch. It's called that because it's resistant to human digestion. That is, it goes in, it comes out the same, untouched by digestion. So you lose 3 grams or so of arabinoxylin. We replace it with fibers from other sources. And these are prebiotic fibers or resistant starches. And we get more than the 3 grams. We go up to 20 grams per day. And you know what? People get astounding regularity. But they even get more. They get better mood, deeper sleep, a drop in blood sugar, a drop in blood pressure, dramatic reduction in colon cancer risk. Their triglycerides drop. Their cholesterol values drop dramatically just by cultivating healthy bowel flora. And there's a whole chapter on that in the Wheat Belly Total Health book, how to cultivate healthy bowel flora. People often hear a probiotic. No. Probiotics only is a start. There's more to do here. Once you seed healthy species with a probiotic, now you need to cultivate healthy species. And this is one of the great lessons learned since the original Wheat Belly came out.
When we first talked about Wheat Belly, your original book, we talked about the effect of wheat and grains on our heart. And since that time, a lot more information has come out. You know, I think that what has been most amazing to me is the effect of the grains and brain disease, and I was hoping that you could talk about the grains and our brains.
Oh, sure. Lots to talk about. There are common effects. A lot of these are due to the gliadin protein of wheat and rye and barley. that protein, when broken down into small pieces or peptides, has that opiate effect? Well, for most of us, it stimulates appetite. It causes us taking about 400 additional calories every day and makes us hungry all the time. But it has other effects, too. These gliadin-derived opiates can also cause behavioral outbursts in kids with ADHD and autistic spectrum disorder. It can trigger the highs, the mania, in people with bipolar illness. It can trigger paranoia in people with schizophrenia. It can trigger 24-hour-a-day food obsessions in people who are prone to bulimia and binge eating disorder. So that's the gliadin protein. There are also actual irreversible or only partially reversible effects on the brain, such as dementia. We now have reports from the Cleveland Clinic that there's something called gluten encephalopathy, a fatal form, a rapidly fatal form of dementia from eating wheat. There's also something called cerebellar ataxia, where the cerebellum is in the back of the brain. It's the part of the brain responsible, very important, it's responsible for balance, control of your bladder and bowels. Well, average age of onset, 52. People find that they're losing control of their bladder and losing balance. And on an MRI, you'll see a shrunken cerebellum, which doesn't grow back. That's disease of wheat. Temporal lobe seizures, in many instances, are a disease of wheat. Peripheral neuropathies, where people lose sensation or have funny tingling or painful feelings, usually in the legs, but can occur in other places too, that 50% of the time, if it's unexplained, if there's no obvious explanation like diabetes, 50% of those cases are due to wheat. See, what's astounding here is that we're talking about the astounding spectrum of diseases caused by the food we're all told to eat more of, and that should dominate diet. And this is why we have a nation that is increasingly sick. But if we understand this, we have the key, an astoundingly effective and simple key to so many health problems.
Wheat Belly Total Health is what we're talking about this evening on Health Notes. William Davis, MD, is our guest. Does the consumption of grains affect our thyroid?
Yes, astoundingly. There's a common, of course, autoimmune condition of the thyroid called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. 50% have antibodies against the gliadin protein of wheat. That is that protein that initiates autoimmunity. So a lot of the cases of autoimmune thyroid disease get their start with consumption of bagels, breads, and other products made of wheat, as well as other cross-reacting grains like rye and barley and corn. You know, people don't think of corn as a grain. They think of it as a vegetable. But what we conceive of as the modern corn plant is actually a human-induced mutation. It's a grotesque mutation. If we looked at the original plant, the ancestor of corn, that is, teosinte, you would say, oh, gee, that's a grass, and there's no cob in sight. The cob is a mutation, a grotesque mutation of the seed head, and the cob is the seed head, and the kernels are the seeds. And so even though they don't look like corn, because of its overlap in structure of the zein protein in corn with the gliadin protein in wheat, they have a lot of overlap. They're not identical, but there's a lot of overlap with those two seeds of grasses.
As I was glancing through your book, I just glanced at your picture in the back of the book, and you've changed a lot, Doctor. You look a lot different. What's happened for you since eliminating
grains?
Actually,
nothing. I'm just miserable. I had my picture taken. I'm the most unphotogenic guy around, so nothing really changed except the photography.
Now, I know that something must have changed in your health since you've changed your diet, though.
My health changed considerably when I started to recognize the ill effect of wheat and grains. It started about 25 years ago when I went very low fat. I cut out all meat, all added oils, only ate whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. And I promptly became diabetic. So I stopped doing that. I became non-diabetic. That was my first hint that there was something very desperately wrong with grains. But you know what? I banged around for another few years, really not understanding that exactly. It took me another many years to figure this out. I also suffered for many years with mind fog and dark thoughts. And these are all wheat-induced feelings and emotions. So when I got rid of all that, it all went away. I used to have a triglyceride level of 350, which is very high, and an HDL good cholesterol value of 27, which is a very low high-risk value. I checked my HDL recently. It's 94, taking no drugs, by the way. No drugs. Triglycerides are in the 40s. I undid all those effects, all due to grains. So yes, I experienced some big effects myself.
So talk to us about meat, and what is your feeling about being a meat eater or a non-meat eater?
You know, unfortunately, meat has lots of issues surrounding it, such as the use of antibiotics to encourage growth of livestock. As you know, there's a tendency now to have animals raised in confined quarters. They're fed grains rather than allowed to roam and eat the grass and fodder. See, they can eat grass and digest it. We can't. But they have specific adaptations that allow them to do that, like four stomachs and a spiral colon much longer than ours, and unique microorganisms, bacteria, in their stomachs and in their colons to digest the components of grass, and that's why they can eat grass, but we can't. Modern livestock are often not allowed to eat grass, but are given grains instead because it's cheaper, and soy. Hmm. And so that changes the composition of the meat we get. Of course, we also have bacterial contamination issues. That's why there's all these difficulties now with recalls, because meat is now tainted with stool. We have all these manipulations by agribusiness of meat. And so if we could remove all those issues introduced by modern processing, so if we purchased our meat, for instance, from a trusted organic source, farmer who allows his, say, his cows or his other animals to range in a field and eat the things that they're supposed to eat, doesn't use antibiotics, then I think we should eat meat. And even further, I think we should go back to the way grandma did it, and also eat the organs. We've forgotten that the most nutritious part of an animal, you know, if we're going to sacrifice the poor animal's life for our survival, we should put that life to best, to full use, and not discard the liver and the heart and the tongue. These are things that are meant to be consumed by humans because we've done it for 2.5 million years.
Is there an effect on our hormones when we consume grains?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great disruptor. Grains are great disruptors of hormonal status. You know, you can see this on the surface in the men, for instance, who have breasts. So if they have what I call a wheat belly, that is this large protuberant abdomen, visceral fat, inflammatory fat from consuming grains and sugars, it often comes with man breasts and large breasts on a male. It's very embarrassing for guys, very embarrassing. And guys will go through plastic surgery. They'll wear really tight-fitting undergarments to compress their breasts. It's very embarrassing. That's a disease of grains, because when you grow that visceral fat, the wheat belly, from grain consumption, it expresses an enzyme called aromatase. And aromatase takes a male's testosterone and converts to estrogen. And remember those gliadin proteins in wheat, rye, and barley? They're degraded to those small peptides. Well, one of them is called the A5 pentapeptide. And this particular little peptide acts on the pituitary gland in the brain and causes it to release prolactin, the hormone prolactin, prolactation. It goes up massively, by the way, with grain consumption, and it causes breast enlargement. When a male stops eating wheat, not only does he lose his tummy, he loses his breasts also. So that's one example of hormonal disruption. We see a lot of this in women who are infertile or have very irregular menstrual cycles and have really out-of-whack hormones, especially if they have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And these are this is all disrupted by grains. So when women give up grains, they have a reduction in estrogens, just like the guys do, reduction in prolactin also. So one of the some women see it as a downside. One of the downsides of grain elimination is a reduction in breast size. But that's a good thing, because if your breasts were being artificially inflated by the high estrogen levels produced by grains, that's a risk factor for breast cancer. So getting rid of the grains that allows you to reduce excessively high estrogens, which can be a real problem for a lot of ladies, this reduces your breast cancer risk. And so there's many hormonal disruptions that occur with grain consumption.
That is so profound. Doctor, could you give us an example of a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner meal so that listeners have an understanding that they won't be deprived without grains?
Beyond rejecting this notion of healthy whole grains, we also reject this idea of cut your fat and cut your saturated fat. You know, that science is virtually non-existent. It's surprising that the national obsession with cutting fat, cutting saturated fat, was based on political motivations, not on hard science. That science does not exist. There was bad science that was used to prove it, but it was bad science. There is no good science, I should say, that supports the notion that limiting fat is good for you. In fact, limiting fat is very bad for you, because the calorie deficit, when you remove fats, is made up by carbohydrates for most people, because you can't increase proteins beyond a certain limitation. Cutting fat and increasing carbohydrate consumption, particularly through grains, is the reason why we have this national epidemic of diabetes and obesity, as well as other conditions like autoimmunity. We have, for breakfast, three eggs in butter or coconut oil, and maybe some sausage or bacon. I think uncured is still a good idea. That is, not meat's not cured with the color fixative sodium nitrite. I think that's still a concern, too. So we just have to hunt down at the store these uncured meats. I've got recipes for what's called grainless granola. People love that crunch, and so you can make a very delicious grainless granola. We've got recipes for muffins. And you know what? Here's an added benefit. If we recreate these foods, familiar foods like cheesecake or pizza, but we don't use wheat, we don't use other grains, we certainly don't use gluten-free ingredients, because those are awful.
Say something about gluten-free so that I want to make sure that everybody understands what you... A lot of people, that's the newest thing now. I'm gluten-free.
I'll come back to that. So if we take all those adverse ingredients out, you know what? Cheesecake and pizza are health foods now. You can have them for breakfast if you want. The gluten-free. Unfortunately, whenever there's something popular in diet or health, there are going to be food manufacturers who step in to profit from it. And what they've done is they've chosen to mimic the taste and texture of wheat products, wheat and gluten, with cornstarch, rice flour, tapioca starch, and potato flour. Among the adverse effects of wheat and other grains is the potential to raise blood sugar sky high. So two slices of whole wheat bread raise blood sugar higher than 6 teaspoons of table sugar. That's fact.
Why underwrite with KFAI? Underwriting announcements provide 20 to 30 seconds for you to increase awareness of your business and reach KFAI's loyal and dedicated listenership. If you're interested in underwriting with KFAI, go to kfai.org/underwriting.
Follow last day is done. Breathe, breathe in the air. Set your intentions. Dream with care. Tomorrow's a new day for everyone. Brand new moon and brand new sun. Of the birds, the direction of love. Breathe, breathe in the air. Cherish this moment, cherish this breath. Tomorrow's a new day for everyone. Brand new moon, brand new sun. When you feel life coming down on you like a heavy weight, when you feel this crazy society adding to the strain, take a stroll to the nearest water's edge. Remember your place. Which way is the wind blowing? And what does your heart say?
Are what you eat, and if you eat these vegetables, you are healthy. The top 10 vegetables. Number 10, eggplant. Vegetarians know eggplant's high fiber content makes it a hearty veggie. With its practically non-existent fat and calorie counts, it's a great weight loss tool, as long as you don't smother it in Parmesan cheese. Eggplants also have heart-healthy components, potassium, which can help reduce strokes and dementia, and antioxidants that prevent damage to brain cells. So put this purple plant in your plan pronto. Number 9. Beets. The nutrient that makes beets red helps fight cancer and lower the risk of heart disease, while beets folate helps pregnant ladies metabolize amino acids. Low fat, low cal, high fiber, and high carb, beets keep your body fueled, blood sugar levels normal, and digestive system healthy. Potassium, magnesium, and manganese keep everything running properly as well. But believe it or not, beet greens contain more nutrients than the root. Number 8, asparagus. Love it or hate it, asparagus ranks high as a free radical fighting powerhouse. A low-cal source of potassium, protein, fiber, and folate. Asparagus is known for its cleansing properties, which means it makes you go number one and number two. With vitamins A, B6, C, and K, cardiovascular health and immunity receive a boost. And iron keeps the oxygen flowing. Plus, some researchers claim it helps hangovers. Number 7, alfalfa sprouts. Raw dieters know sprouts are full of plant-based proteins, and unlike the also important beans and peas, they don't need to be cooked to be enjoyed. They're bursting with antioxidants and can help with anything from heart disease and cancer to osteoporosis and menopause. Their fiber helps you feel fuller longer. Plus, they boast nutrients like calcium, potassium, zinc, and manganese, and a bunch of vitamins between A and K. Number 6. Carrots. We've heard the old wives' tale. Carrots are good for sight. Is it true? Beta-carotene makes carrots orange, and humans metabolize it into vitamin A, which in turn keeps eyes, skin, and hair healthy. Carrots' vitamin C keeps cardiovascular systems running smoothly and promotes iron absorption, while vitamin K ensures your blood clots. Various other nutrients and minerals are Mother Nature's way of preventing problems from cataracts to cancers. Number 5. Dark green vegetables. Whether it's leafy greens like spinach, Swiss chard, or kale, or cruciferous veggies like broccoli, cabbage, or Brussels sprouts, they're lean, green, disease-fighting machines. Their folate is great during pregnancy, while antioxidants and phytonutrients help against colds and cancers. The iron, calcium, magnesium, potassium, and vitamins in dark greens promote overall health, but broccoli is especially talented at preventing stomach, lung, and rectal cancers and type 2 diabetes. Number 4. Tomatoes. Low-cal but nutrient-dense, a tomato's most impressive feature is lycopene, which protects against breast, colon, lung, skin, and prostate cancers, reduces cholesterol, and regulates blood pressure. Beside fiber and heart-healthy nutrients, vitamins like A, which helps skin and eyes, C, which fights infection and maintains connective tissue, and K, which prevents osteoporosis, make tomatoes indispensable. Technically, they're a fruit, but call us when you have one for dessert. Number 3. Bell peppers. These yummy veggies are also called capsicum or sweet peppers. Red ones are healthiest, with more lycopene, carotene, and vitamins A, B, C, and K. Those prevent cancers and keep teeth, gums, and eyesight in tip-top shape. Inflammation from arthritis and asthma and age-related diseases don't stand a chance against their antioxidants, and fiber, potassium, and manganese are a few more of this superfood's benefits. Number 2. Sweet potatoes. Smokers and diabetics can benefit from eating this vegetable. Vitamin A protects against emphysema, while a low glycemic index rating keeps insulin levels normal. Sweet potatoes also crush other veggies in nutrient density, with more fiber, protein, and complex carb content, plus anti-cancer vitamins A and C, iron, and calcium. Beta-carotene targets free radicals, vitamins and antioxidants fight inflammation and heart disease, and potassium lowers blood pressure. Superfood for sure. Number 1. Allium foods. Adding flavorful and healthful properties to meals, the allium family includes leeks, chives, garlic, and onions. Famous in herbal medicine, both onions and garlic boast antibiotic advantages, increase immunity, and fight inflammation, while garlic is used to treat coughs and colds. Alliums also balance cholesterol levels, help prevent hardened arteries, lower BP, and fight certain cancers and neurological diseases like Alzheimer's. And that ain't even everything. Adding any extra fruits and veggies to your diet is a smart move, but like anything, do it in moderation.
Make me laugh. are a genie, and all I ask for is your smile each time I rub the lamp. La 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 la. When I am with you, I have a giggling teenage crush, and now I'm a sultry man.
Yet another study says sitting leads to higher death rates and higher rates of chronic disease and illness. A study published in the International Journal of Behavioral Nutrition and Physical Activity followed over 63,000 men from 45 to 65 years old, and they recorded how much time they spent on their duff. While monitoring sitting, they also took a detailed look at their overall health. The men were placed into categories of sitting. The categories were less than 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours, and 8 hours or more. As with other research, this study found evidence that the more you sit, the more likely you are to have chronic illness and therefore a shortened lifespan. This research showed a clear correlation to sitting and health. Those who sat less than 4 hours a day were much less likely to have chronic disease. Those who sat for 8 hours or more per day had a significant increase in diabetes. With each category, the more sitting, the more likely you were to have chronic illness. There is a lot of research that shows sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is bad for us. However, there are critics out there. One thing to keep in mind is that what isn't clear is how many of these subjects who suffer from chronic disease sit because of their chronic disease. Is it the sitting that causes the disease, or the disease that causes the sitting? More research definitely needs to be done in that area. However, this research, along with other big studies, show that moving throughout the day is most likely a very healthy thing to do. In 2007, a study found that prolonged sitting was as bad for your health as smoking. One study out of Australia found that adults who sit for 11 or more hours per day had a 40% increase of dying in the next 3 years as compared to those who sat fewer hours. There are a lot of implications to this research. Sitting obviously affects the masses, from airline pilots to the millions of people who sit in cubicles for work. We may need to find ways to counteract the seemingly devastating effects of sitting too much. If you are physically able, it is undoubtedly good to get up and move that body. This has been a Health Note by Dr. Jonathan Arnold of Arnold Chiropractic and Acupuncture.
We must realize that the healing power of spirit is within each and every one of us. We each have the power to heal not only ourselves, but our world and all those around us. Spirit expressing through us as a kind word, a caring touch, or a simple smile may be all that it takes. When we realize who we are, the blessings we have been given, the power we embody, we have tapped into the source of our healing ability. Every day, we have at least one opportunity to help a friend, a loved one, or even a stranger, regardless of the color of our skin, our economic status, our social or political philosophy. It is our responsibility to do what we can, when we can, to assure that someone else does better. Today, let us become aware of the healing power within and dedicate ourselves to uplifting those we touch. Affirmation. Through the healing power of the spirit within, I bless others today. That comes from the book Acts of Faith, Iyanla Van Zandt.
Supported by the Great Northern Festival. From January 25th until February 4th, the Great Northern Festival activates the Twin Cities with unique performances, outdoor recreation, dining experiences, art activities, and climate conversations that celebrate Minnesota's cold, creative winters. Family-friendly events included. Schedules, tickets, and more information can be found at thegreatnorthernfestival.com.
KFAI is proud to present Eric Johansson at the Dakota performing Wednesday, February 7th. Touring behind his latest album, The Deep and the Dirty, Louisiana native Eric Johansson reaches beyond the blues with an assortment of eclectic and electrifying songs. Tickets for Eric Johansson can be found at the Dakota website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
Fresh Air Community Radio is